This is North Shore Today. Hello, everyone. With Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. In today's program, the latest on the hazing incident out of Swampscott that has shelved the football team for the weekend. We also have a handful of preliminary results from the elections from Tuesday. And our own Tim Kearns talks with Danvers boys soccer coach Mike Chase.
And just kind of, you know, with the squad we got this year, kind of building what we've had in the previous years.
Well, hello, everyone. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. And Rick, it's a wet start to Wednesday, a very wet start to Wednesday. But then again, we need the rain, and so hopefully no one's getting too much of the stuff, meaning in their basements for this this Wednesday.
Well, we do automatically. We're in the middle of a hill, and we have nothing but ledge, so we get the water that runs through the basement every time we get substantial rain. But yeah, as you mentioned, we're long overdue.
Yeah.
Just keeping your fingers crossed that the Topsfield Fair has a lot of people able to go to it, that the rain doesn't dampen their turnout, so to speak. Topsfield Fair, you know, a very popular event at the end of September and the beginning of October every year. A lot of fun to go there, see all the stuff going on. We hope to have some interviews this week with members of the staff at the Topsfield Fair, including the general manager. But I'm not exactly positive that's going to happen, but we're working on it.
All right, sounds good. And yeah, the Topsfield Fair is a great event, and I'm not a meteorologist. I don't have the radar in front of me, but certainly we're getting a lot of rain early on the day on Wednesday, and there's also some talk about a storm later on sometime early next week. But some of that's been postponed, and I know for the fair, weekends are huge for them. So hopefully if they can get a decent weekend out of this without not too much rain, families can get up there and enjoy that the Topsfield Fair. So we'll be hearing more about that. Plus, Pat Benatar. You're going to talk to Pat Benatar, Rick? Can you do that?
Probably not. No. Probably not. But it would be fun, I'm sure.
I'm sure it would be. Well, the big story, I think, that swept across the North Shore yesterday and, middle of the day yesterday was the story out of the hazing incident out of Swampscott. And apparently what the television stations are reporting, we have a post up on it on our website, but what the television stations are reporting is that on Friday night, there were a group of students out beyond the football field. It sounds like there's a traditional bonfire involving students and involving the football team, and that several of them were naked and doing jumping jacks and doing push-ups. And so the police were called to the event, and that's when they became aware of it. And the police are involved with it. The superintendent issued a statement basically saying that she was going to cancel the game for this Saturday, the freshman game and the varsity game. The freshman game would have been Thursday, I believe. But the games have been canceled, and that that some of the students were interviewed on television saying that, well, this has gone on before. No one's forced to do it. But I guess it does fall under the category of hazing. And so it is being investigated, and we'll see what happens with that. And I was over at Swampscott yesterday afternoon, and there was all the television trucks were there. Parents met apparently with school leadership with some students last night. And so we'll see where this goes. But as of right now, the Saturday football game against Saugus is not going to happen. Rick, we didn't have it on our broadcast schedule, so that's good news for us, I guess. But it sounds like
I have many.
Go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just saying I have many, many thoughts about this. And watching the interviews on Channel 5 last night was disturbing. They interviewed two kids, and one of the kids said, well, you know, it goes on all the time. They were volunteers. That begs the question, Bill, if it's part of the culture, in my mind, it's, having played sports, having been an educator, being a parent, in my mind, it comes under the category of bullying. And whether it's a tradition or not, it's still a matter of bullying, which they label hazing. You know, as 7th and 8th graders, you know you've got to face that the next year. And in some cases, okay, you may be, quote, volunteering, unquote, but you're not really. And in some cases, it's terrifying. And in Gloucester, I know that there was there's a culture or a belief that seniors are going to throw freshmen into the canal when they get there. And 8th grade. It's still pervasive in the 8th grade today. It doesn't happen. It never happens. As far as I know, it never has happened, maybe back in the 40s and 50s. But the fact that the eighth graders are nervous about it and worried about it, you know, is upsetting. Now, you take this situation, if I may wax here for a little bit philosophical, and you listen to these kids say, well, you know, it's always gone on here. Well, excuse me, that doesn't make it right. And again, they're freshmen, volunteering or not. It in my mind, it doesn't have anything to do with athletics. It doesn't have anything to do with team building. It doesn't have anything to do with the maturation process. And I do think it's bullying. And I really have a question, Bill, as to whether it affected the team's performance on Saturday, because many of us are still talking about that game. And we're absolutely stunned at the way that first half unfolded. 48-13 Gloucester in the first half, which is the way the final score ended up. But there were some very uncharacteristic play, or at least effort, in my mind, in the way that Swampscott looked like it was playing. And so I wonder if that Friday night thing carried over into Saturday. That's speculation. But in terms of hazing or bullying, or, you know, if in fact, and it's been admitted, they're saying, okay, kids were out there doing what you just described. Well, I'm sorry, that's wrong, period. Exclamation point on top of that.
Yeah. And I would add to that point that I got to think that it impacted what happened on Saturday. I'm not taking anything away from Gloucester. That's not the point here. But the fact is that something appeared to be off with that Swampscott football team maybe on Saturday. And from what I had seen, and I had seen their previous games. So, and I can't say that for sure. Maybe Gloucester was just all that incredibly great. But and I think they're a very good football team, by the way. But on the other hand, you know, it did seem like that might have impacted. And it would make sense. I mean, it would impact anybody. If you were facing, or your teammates were facing, some kind of issue with the police, and that's what happened the night before, hours before, then I think it's going to impact your performance on the following day or a few hours
later.
Yeah,
and Bill, I'm not advocating punishment. I'm not advocating, you know, going to jail, anything like that. What I'm just advocating is that if that culture is endemic, if it is there, then it definitely ought to be changed. It must stop. I don't think. And, you know, I watched the Red Sox. You see the thing on the Red Sox last night when all the rookies had to dress up? Well, that's a form of hazing. But, you know, it's also with adults. And all they did was they put on these silly costumes. They all got together and took some pictures. Now, on the surface, that seems fairly harmless, and it seems like it's good, clean fun. I guess in football, they shave rookies' heads, or that's what they used to do at the NFL level. But again, remember, that's at that level, you know, and there's a lot more involved. And I'm not even saying that that is right, but I know at the high school level, to be coerced or even to do something like that is beyond the pale, especially if you're out there doing what you just described. And I'm astounded by that myself. I can't in any way, shape, or form see how that involves team building or promotes positive culture.
Yeah, the other piece was according to the statement from the superintendent, there were no adults at that event, which would make sense. I did talk to a woman who was works for Channel 5 and tech, and she was saying, well, you know, these kinds of things happened back years ago, but she was thinking of the streaking and in college, but the difference is that's college. It's not high school. It's not high school freshmen. It is different as you're pointing out. So we'll see. And you might remember one of the channels last night ran the story. Remember, Swampscott was in the news for that freshman orientation piece. I don't know if you remember that story, Rick, from a few years ago. But it used to be when the freshmen walked in on the first day of school, and if I have this story off a little bit, it could be off a little bit, but fundamentally I think it's pretty sound, is that they would walk into school, they would go through this tunnel of upperclassmen and get kind of slapped down a little bit or whatever it was, as they'd have to walk through this as almost like an initiation the very first day of school. That came out in the news, and that got stopped. But that was, I think, a couple of years ago.
Well, I wish the coach, Coach Serino, his staff, and the team, I wish them well. And I hope this gets settled in a really positive manner, and that this whole thing gets out on the table, and that it discontinues. It stops immediately, and maybe some other form of a new idea comes to the fore in how to promote either team building or a pep rally or whatever it might be. But and again, I'm not advocating anything in the negative. I'm just saying it's not, in my opinion, it should not be condoned. It should not be just fluff. And I'm sure, again, what we saw on television last night were high school kids talking about it. We didn't see any adults. So, you know, to say again that it was, you know, it's always gone on, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's a high school student's opinion. You know, so I'm sure, as you mentioned, the adults are not promoting this, and it will get fixed. And I wish the Swampscott football team and Coach Serino nothing but the best. This is not easy to work with 40, 50, 60 kids so many hours a week. It's just not easy. And so, you know, hope this thing gets cleared up and gets put on the right track quickly and actually gets put to bed very fast as well. It's a negative thing that, you know, Swampscott does not need a blemish on its face either. They don't need, nobody does. So we'll see how it plays out. And I'm sure it's going to be settled very quickly.
All right. Looking at preliminary elections from yesterday, a couple of notes here. One from Peabody up in Ward 1, where they had a they had the race in the preliminary election, and the winners were Jen Turco and Brian Barrett. So they'll be advancing on out of the Ward 1 city council race in Peabody. So those are I think there were three running for the two slots there in the preliminary to be on the ballot in November. So those were the two winners in Peabody last night.
Yeah, and in Gloucester, Mayor Romeo Taken, Interim Mayor Romeo Taken, and the City Council President Paul McGeary finished at the top two in the ticket, and Greg Verga finished third. So Romeo Taken had about 303 more votes than McGeary, and McGeary had about 1,000 more than Greg Verga. A very small turnout, surprisingly. I think there are... I'm trying to see if I can find it here. I think there are something like 16,000. I'm sorry, there are 20,000 registered voters, and fewer than 5,000 turned out. So, you know, less than 25%. But it'll be Romeo Taken versus McGeary. And then in the only other contested race in terms of a preliminary race, where there are three and you had to whittle it down to two, was Ward 1. And in Ward 1, it is Scott Memhard versus Everett Brown. So those are the two people who topped the ticket there, and they'll be facing off in November. And I'm just trying to think. Oh, yeah, Bill, there's one other story that I'd like to mention. Is that okay?
Yeah, you have permission to go ahead with that one. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much. There's a story by Julia Manganis in both the Gloucester Times and the Salem News about a heroin addict who was arrested over the weekend. I don't know if it was over the weekend or if it was yesterday, but he was arrested after... being caught stealing some stuff. And the point is that he had told his lawyer, and he told police, he had been trying to get to Gloucester to get into their, what they're calling an amnesty program, into the Angel program, because he is a heroin addict and wanted some help. So police found $42 that had been stolen, and he ripped off apparently a $13 item from a convenience store. So a total of $55 gets this man arrested and in jail. And, you know, it to me should increase the conversation as to okay, what is going on, and in fact, you know, can this kind of a person be helped? Salem is not in the Angel program. Salem police are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and doing a good job. The man did break the law, and so, you know, it just, I think, might create some conversation somewhere, you know, as to you know, how this heroin problem, or I guess they call it opioid problem, is being fought.
Well, it brings to a point that those families that have dealt with these opioid problems, they know that stealing is a part of the problem. It goes hand in hand. It's like if you get whacked in the arm, it's going to hurt. I mean, the two go hand in hand. So the fact that somebody is stealing something, and in this case, it to me that sounds like peanuts compared to what they could be taking and could be requiring for money, and basically stealing. That is part of the addiction, and it goes hand in hand with the addiction. And so, it's this exciting what Gloucester is doing. It's exciting that it's spreading. You know, when you have a major problem like this, you like to have somebody come at it with a different angle. And this seems to be what Gloucester is doing seems to be appealing to a lot of other communities and a lot of other leaders around, not just the, Essex County area, but around the country. I think there was a story, Rick, wasn't there, that Florida, there's a place in Florida that's looking at this in a different way too. So it's spreading a little bit. I think that's the good news, because it's an addiction first, and it's a crime second, is basically what it is.
Yeah, and the other aspect of it, of course, is that the public is trying to get involved now with the big pharmaceuticals, because many of these addictions actually begin with legitimate prescribed painkillers that people have for injuries or operations or whatever, and then it becomes an addiction. And so this whole thing is just it's huge, and it's good to see that people are agencies and the general public is getting involved more in trying to approach this thing from a positive viewpoint. I know an individual, Bill, this is just an aside, I know an individual who actually used to get himself injured deliberately so that he could get prescription painkillers, and his injuries were not something, I mean, they weren't minor. And so, I knew this from like 10 years ago, and it's just scary that would happen, but that's, it does, it just takes over the system, and it's insidious. So good that there is publicity on it, and there is positive movement in trying to get this thing fixed.
Well, I think there's a problem too, and I don't know this. I mean, I know in certain parts of the country there's a doctor problem. There's certain times this stuff is prescribed, and in my opinion, it really shouldn't be prescribed, and it only should be prescribed if you're in a hospital setting where it can be controlled by professionals rather than being taken out. And especially for young people, or vulnerable people, and it's because these are powerful, like the Oxycontin is a very powerful painkiller, and it's an addictive painkiller at that. And to be honest with you, I know firsthand about that piece with a family member that it's tragic. It takes lives, And in my family situation, I personally blame the doctor for prescribing it to a 21-year-old. You know what I'm saying? But on the other hand, people, our family's lucky in certain regards. Other families go through exactly the scenario you just described, where the family member is stealing, getting in trouble with the law, having all kinds of different confrontations that are just, very difficult for that person and for the family to be dealing with. And so it's tragic. And again, I salute Gloucester and the police chief there for what he's trying to do, and recognizing that, incarceration. Yeah, unfortunately, we need to incarcerate people here and there. We need to incarcerate. We need to have that option available, at certain times. But that won't solve the problem for the addicted.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, when I was talking off Police Chief Campanello in Gloucester last week, I bet every single person who views these our website, every single person we know, knows someone either in the family or very close to that person who's been affected by this one way or another. So it's huge, but there is movement. And years ago the cigarette industry controlled everything, and that was overcome after a time. So it's fixable, and people are working on it.
Right, and again, I kind of look at this as some of these things. I think the medical community really needs to take a look at this piece and we need to get some better data is basically what I'm saying, as to how much, who's been prescribed these things and then what happens to them later on.
One more thing. I know that people can go shopping. I have a family member who actually went shopping for painkillers with different doctors, and they're working on that piece as well. They're trying to get some kind of a system going where they know who has actually prescribed what, because if you have several doctors, then you can go ahead and get that prescription that you want from the different doctors without Dr. A knowing what Dr. B has prescribed.
Right. And doctor shopping also is that if you go to one doctor and you're looking for a painkiller and that doctor says no, as many of them would, then you go to another doctor and, enroll in their practice, then because that doctor will say yes, because there's a network of people out there that communicate and spread this around. That then you can get to that doctor, and that doctor will be an automatic, yep, here's your prescription, go ahead, and you're good to go. And that's the way it works,
Well, the ball is rolling, and I'm optimistic that things are going to get better. I think it is. I think it will. And just the fact, even in that Salem story with the young man who was arrested, said, I want help. So, okay, that's where it's supposed to start from everything I've read.
Absolutely. Got a note of a blood drive taking place in Manchester, Essex. I believe it's tomorrow, October 1st, and it's sponsored. It'll be at Sacred Heart Parish, which is at 62 School Street at Manchester by the Sea, sponsored by the Knights of Columbus. And it is from 2 to 7 during the day tomorrow, October 1. Tomorrow's October 1, Rick. Oh, my gosh.
It is. It is. How about that? And I was just looking at the newspaper to see what time it is, but I guess that won't work. But it does say Wednesday, September 30. Yeah, tomorrow, Thursday, October 1. Boy, it is rolling along. We're almost at the midway point of the high school football season. Very exciting stuff, and we're just rolling along here with MSO New Sports and having a blast. Are you going to Topsail Fair?
I don't know. I'm not going this weekend. I know that, but that's not because of the weather. But yeah, I probably will try to get up there. You know, now that the kids are older, we don't go every year, but we used to go all the time, and it's a good take.
I get to enjoy it a little bit more now that the kids are older because I don't have to take them through the carnival rides. We can actually go through the fair. And one of my favorite things is just walking the midway and just getting the different aromas from all the food and then going look at the great pump, or the giant pumpkin, I guess it's called. Great pumpkin is Charlie Brown. The giant pumpkin. And what else do I like? I really
like
enjoy
to look
going.
At the, look at the rabbits, maybe? You like to look at the rabbits?
I like the what are they, the blankets, what do they call those things? The
quilts.
The comforters, or they make
quilts.
The quilts with the squares on how artistic they are. I love looking at those. And the other thing is the flower displays, because my wife did some bonsai trees for a while, and she knows a lot of the people who are in that. And to see the way these things are grown and the way they're displayed, it's just tremendous. A lot of fun. Love it up there.
It obviously brings you back to a different time and place, you know, in the country when this stuff was a little more prevalent, you know. But you know, it's I'm trying to think the, but you know, you go back and these you know, the 4-H club. Now you don't hear the word 4-H club, you know, at all during the course of the year until you go to the Topsfield Fair and you see 4-H club or some of these other organizations doing stuff. And it's also not. I always like the nice little like the there's a I know there's a I think it's a Topsfield church that always has a little food place. I know that, I think like we've always gotten some food there. They have a chowder there. It's, you know, at the fair, you know, you grab something like that for to eat, and in the bees and the honey. I always like to have. We're big on the. Not that we have it very often, but big on the local honey, which is the time. Really, if you're going to buy honey, you probably should buy the local honey for whatever reason, all the advantages they say. We don't often do it, but that's an opportunity to maybe be there, buy the local honey.
Yeah, the other thing I like is every other year or so, they have the Royal Canadians come in with their musical ride. And what I really like about it, it's fun watching the actual display, the actual event that they put on. But then afterwards, the horses ring the arena, and kids can go up and pet the horses and talk to the RCMP. And that is really cool. It's to me, that's a really emissarial type thing that's really cool between the two countries. And, you know, you mentioned 4-H. What about FFA? Do you remember FFA?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Future Farmers of America, right?
There you go, yep.
And then you got the you can always – they always have a pen with some pigs, some sheep, all that stuff, right? The cows.
Yeah. All right, now you got me wanting to get up there, and I hope we can make it.
I'll give you some.
Gotta get some of that fudge too.
Yeah, grab you a couple of bucks for some fried dough, so you have something like that too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Topsfield Fair. Yeah, so that's there you go. So that's that all starts up on Friday. So that's starting up in just a day or so as well. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for them that the weather's not too bad. And it doesn't sound like it will be too bad. So it'll all work out, I think, for, you know, maybe it'll be fantastic, you know, from later on next week into the Columbus Day weekend, which is again their big weekend. So that's part of the things that do happen. Unfortunately, with Joaquin, this storm apparently is moving very slowly, so it won't even get here till next week now. So, but that's a little bit of a concern. So, all right, we got Mike Chase standing by with Tim Kearns on. He's the boys soccer coach at Danvers High School. Richard, anything else?
No, I'm good, Bill. Just hoping we get our games in.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment. But first, a quick interview with Mike Chase and Tim Kearns, and we'll be back in just a couple moments.
For MSONewsSports.com, I'm Tim Kearns. This is the Coach's File, brought to you by Big Jim's Auto Body, 19 Creek Street in Beverly. For the best auto body repair in the Salem-Beverly area, contact Jimmy Zarello at 978-927-3201. That's Big Jim's Auto Body. Joining me today in the Coach's File is Danvers Boys soccer coach Mike Chase. Mike, welcome back once again to MSO.
Thanks for having me.
All right, season's off to a good start, 4-1-2. Let's talk about the team.
Yeah, so far...
four wins, a loss, and two ties is a good way to start for us, to be honest with you. This is the first year we've been bumped into the north of the larger schools. We've had the luxury of winning the lower division 6 years in a row. So we swapped spots with Salem, which provides for a more difficult schedule, which is something I think that's good for the program. Allows us to kind of build for the state tournament, play some of those bigger schools like Beverly and Peabody, get them twice on the schedule as opposed to once previous years. And just kind of, you know, with the squad we got this year, kind of building what we've had in the previous years. I think, you know, we get some good depth back. We got a big, strong junior class, a bunch of starters returning. We did lose some key guys in the back on defense, but we're solidified back there by two captains. We have Cam Bornstein, who's a senior, four-year starter, goaltender, all-conference player. And our center back, Spencer Person, is a junior captain as well. This is his third year starting. So with those two guys in the back, you know, we've been doing a good job of keeping the ball out of the back of the net, which has led to some success.
How has the league changed? Because before it was all Northeast Columbia. You played everybody in order to get your draw for the tournament. Now it went to two divisions, North and South, big and small, however you want to divide it. What was the biggest difference playing in small versus, as you've seen so far this season, playing in the big?
Yeah, so I think the biggest difference is that it's larger school sizes typically lead to bigger programs, more kids to choose from, typically better talent. This year, to be honest with you, we're just starting to dip into the small side of things. We played Salem the other day, who we swapped spots with, who has nine freshmen on their varsity team. So that could be a disadvantage for a lot of teams. We only beat them 1-0. They played us very, very hard. So that was a good thing. What I'm seeing more and more right now in the NEC is we're seeing a lot more you know, more talent at the top. We played a real strong Revere team when we jumped out. And we do have some, you know, some bowlers where we get some teams that are a little bit struggling. Saugus is having a down year, and Winthrop's struggling a little bit to put the ball in the back of the net. So to pick those guys up only once during the schedule and see Revere and Peabody and Beverly twice, that's where the real difference comes in. Gets us ready for that state tournament, like we said. But the first and primary goal every year is to go out and qualify for the tournament.
Okay. Has the success of the men's as well as the women's soccer, national soccer teams had an impact on the number of kids that are coming out to play soccer for both boys and girls?
We haven't seen it at this level, to be honest with you, just yet. We've been pretty steady at the Damrus High School for the boys' side of things, in and around 50, 55 kids. I would see that more of an impact with the younger kids, to be honest with you. With numbers getting bled out of youth soccer systems due to, you know, club soccer is one reason, but there's also a lot more offerings for kids these days, lacrosse and flag football, and those things are just drawing kids into different sports, which is good for the individual kid, but for the game of soccer, it's not helping. But I think that the rise of the popularity of the sport on that national level, it's only going to help the youth programs, which will in turn eventually, I think, help the high schools as well. But, you know, one of the other things that we run into here in Danvers is we get St. John's Prep right up the road. I think that, you know, Danvers High School, with their new high school, we got a new stadium going in and all those things. That's going to hopefully help us kind of keep some of that talent in town and help us stay competitive with some of the private schools in the area.
You just have to last long enough as the head coach to see that youth get up to the varsity level.
That's my intention. Yeah, I still got a few years ahead of me. You know, I've been around for a long time. But hopefully, you know, I probably get 20 years here at the helm left at least. So, you know, we get some years here, and hopefully some of those guys that haven't even started playing yet, I'll have them in the future.
Okay, who's the opposition today?
We're taking on Winthrop today. Like I said, you know, Winthrop is a team that sometimes you could classify them as a trap game. They're a bunch of young guys. This year is the first year in a couple years that they've had a JV team as well. So that's only improving for their program, which is great. This is one of those games you got to get up and you got to get the guys ready for. When you play Beverly, when you play Revere and Peabody, the guys know what they're walking into. You're walking in one of the top talented teams in the conference, and you don't have to say much before the game to get those guys fired up. So my challenge today is to get my guys ready to take on a team that's kind of been struggling to put the ball in the back of the net. And you can't take them lightly, and this can't be a game that we just think we can put the blue jersey on or the white jersey on and walk out here as Falcons and take on, you know, a lesser opponent, because you got to win these games too. So the idea against Winthrop today is, you know, finding the net early.
And Winthrop's always a dogfight no matter what sport you're
playing. Absolutely. Those kids, you know, it's just how they're born and raised up there, you know. You know, we've had games where we've walked into Winthrop and here we go. We're down 1-0 5 minutes in and we're all scratching our heads saying, what are we doing? We just got to make sure we go out and take care of our business, play our game to start the set, and then set the tone.
Mike, great to see you as usual. Best of luck today.
Likewise. Thank you, sir.
Okay. That's been Mike Chase, varsity boys soccer coach here at Denver High School, in the Coaches File for MSONewsSports.com. I'm Tim Kearns.
Hello, sports fans. This is Wally, the voice of Honeydew Donuts. All right, you're getting ready to go to a game. I don't care if it's morning, afternoon, or night. Don't forget, stop into Honeydew Donuts and get yourself a cup of coffee. How about that large iced coffee? That Mocha Madness one is unbelievable. You'll think you went to Honeydew Heaven. So remember, you heard it here first on MSONewsSports.com. And remember the name, it's Honeydew Donuts, the only way to go.
And welcome back to MSONewsSports.com. A couple of high school football games this Friday night. It is Gloucester playing at Revere Friday night at 7 o'clock. That's our live video streaming game. And our other game will find the dominant Beverly Panthers playing at Lynn English on Friday night. That's our radio game on Channel B on Friday night at 7 o'clock. So those are our two games this weekend. How many games have we already done, Rick? Like 9 games, you're saying?
Yeah, we've done 9 through the first 3 weekends, including 3 video games. So we're rolling right along. If everything goes to schedule, we'll have 11 in the first 4 weekends.
Absolutely. And so there you go. And those are the games scheduled for Friday night. So hopefully those games all get in on schedule and so on. I think that from what I understand, the Lynn games will happen. I mean, unless there's thunder or lightning, and I don't think that's really in the forecast. So I think games probably will happen this weekend, you know, from what I – but again, we're a few days out on the weather forecast. And I guess that's pretty much it on the program here today.
Always fun, Bill. I got to have my second cup of coffee now.
There you go. That's Rick Moore. I'm Bill Newell. This is North Shore Today on MSONewsSports.com.